All right, welcome to today's featured interview. And I can't believe that I have never done an official interview with this person, because her website and her work and her influence has been so critical over the years for preppers and for people being aware of what's going on. And I'm a fan of her work and her website and her other writers as well. Her name's Daisy Luther, organicpreppers.com, and also thefrugalite.com, which we'll talk about here. Daisy Luther, it's just fantastic to have you on. I can't believe we've never done an interview before. I'm a fan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, I'm just thrilled to have you here. You've done just extraordinary work for many years. Can I ask you, when was organicpreppers.com first launched?
I launched theorganicprepper.com. Actually, it started off as theorganicprepper.ca. I lived in Canada when we first started back in 2012. And in 2013, when I moved to the U.S., I changed it to theorganicprepper.com.
I mistakenly said the wrong URL.
Okay.
But
oh,
that's what I meant, theorganicprepper.com.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
No problem. But it did start out as a Canadian website and then, you know, just kind of brought it with me. So I've been doing this since 2012.
Well, that's fantastic. You've done a lot of great reporting. You've had a lot of bombshell stories. You've broken a lot of news over the years. And I thank you. I think you've helped a lot of people. And then your newer site, I think it's newer, thefrugalite.com. Tell
yes.
us about that, because I think it is really going to help people navigate what's coming.
Yeah, that is a new website. And our tagline on that site is living large on a tiny budget. A lot of frugal living websites they're very sad. You know, it seems like a lot of work and it seems like you never get to have any fun. And it just seems like it's all about deprivation. And this website, of course, you know, there are times that you really do have to cut back and change the way you're living, but it doesn't have to be miserable or dismal. You can still have lots of fun with your kids. You can still go on vacation. You can still occasionally eat out and, you know, just enjoy your life. It's just all about how you budget your money and how you save in places that, you know, maybe don't affect your quality of life as much.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I'd love to talk to you a little bit here about frugal living. This is something I've advocated as well. And I'd like to point out right up front that actually frugal living over the long run becomes more abundant living, because there's no faster way to become poor than to overspend. Right?
Absolutely. I agree with you completely. When I first really, really went on a major frugal living overhaul, you know, I was in debt. I had, you know, lost my house and my car and, you know, just a whole bunch of things had gone wrong. And when everything went belly up in 2008, I worked in the automotive industry. And so by 2009, 2010, I had lost my job. So the house of cards really collapsed when I lost my job.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, getting that under control and living frugally was just such a leap into freedom. I mean, it didn't start out as a whole lot of fun, you know, because I had to change my daughter's school. I had to make enormous changes. But once we got used to it and once we really got the hang of it, we were just living so much better than we were before.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
Time. You know, a big thing with that was I had more time to spend with my children.
There you go. And that's, you can't put a price on that.
Absolutely.
But we live in a culture, as you well know, that is so focused on materialism, and especially across social media. And this is true across all age groups, but perhaps more so with younger people. They tend to define themselves by the stuff that they can show on camera to show that they're living the life. Especially, I've noticed a lot of young men, they want to have these really fancy cars and they want to have lots of them for some reason. I never understood what's the point in any of that. But young women often, you know, at least the mainstream ones, they want to have the fashion purses and the vacations and the fashion clothes and everything. And, you know, there is no faster way to poverty than to just spend, trying to impress your friends.
Exactly. You know, my daughters were brought up, we didn't have a lot of money when they were little. And then when we did have more money, we were still pretty careful with it. And they are 22 and 27, and they are the most down-to-earth young women. You know, we get together at Christmas, and most of our gifts are handmade, and we cook together. And, you know, we just focus so much more on experiences and spending time together.
Yeah.
And I'm just so proud of how they turned out.
Well, that's amazing to hear that. And I'm sure that what you do has been strongly influential in what they do. But let me ask you this question. Can you share with us? I'm sorry to put you on the spot, but share with us, if you would, and I'll share also a story, a personal story from you or your family about frugality. It doesn't have to be a crazy thing, but it could be something quite sensical. But have you experienced something that you'd be willing to share publicly about frugal living or something that your family did to save money?
Sure. I mean, I can think of a lot of things. This isn't so much about saving money, but it's about mindset. When we were really, really broke, when we lost the house and the car and all of the other stuff, you know, I mean, it was a horrible time for us. It was incredibly difficult for the girls. They had to move away from their friends and lose their room and all that kind of stuff. But every week when we went to the grocery store, I had a very limited budget, about $30 a week, but I pulled aside $2, one for each girl, and one of them got to buy a package of pasta, and one got to buy a package of like spaghetti sauce. And there was a bin at the door as you left the grocery store, and that was for the food bank. And every time, they put so much thought and so much effort into what they were choosing to put in that bin, because I told them, you know, you're buying somebody a meal right now with this dollar a piece, you are making sure that somebody somewhere has a hot meal, and you know they're going to go to bed with full tummies, and it's because of what you did. It's because of your decisions. So choose really carefully something that'll be really good. And they would spend, you know, 15 or 20 minutes getting exactly the right sauce, you know, the right canned sauce to go with the bag of pasta. And it was important because they knew that even though things were tough for us, there were people who had it worse than we did, and that they had within them the capacity to help. And yeah. I think that is such an important lesson, that we all have the capacity to help others.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's well stated. I'll share a memory. My grandparents grew up during the Great Depression, and at one point they lived in a tent it was a work tent. It was part of, there was a company that my grandfather worked for, and all the employees were given space in a field to set up a tent. So they would work, you know, save the money and just live in a tent for a while. And when I was a kid, you know, growing up in the 70s, I was very wasteful, relatively wasteful, because, you know, here we are in the 70s, pretty abundant time era in terms of stuff. And I would leave lights on all the time. And my grandmother and grandfather would go behind me. Anytime I moved around their house, I would leave lights on, and they would turn the lights off. And I asked them one time, why do you keep turning off all the lights? And that's when they told me about living in the tent and saving old inner tubes from bicycle tires in case you needed to repair a pair of shoes and things like that. They told me Great Depression stories, and my jaw dropped. It was the first time I got an idea of what it was like to live poor, but it changed my perception. And yeah, that's when I started turning off lights.
Absolutely. I grew up, my father was a doctor, so I never ever experienced any kind of poverty or any kind of shortage of money when I was growing up. So it was really, really different for my children than it was for me. You know, it was just a completely different circumstance. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that in a lot of ways, I think that they were better prepared for adult life than I was, because I didn't really know how to handle money or how to be thrifty, or how to be careful, or how to make a budget, you know, because everything had been handed to me. And that's certainly not a criticism of my parents, because, you know, my dad was a great provider, but we didn't end up in that situation. And I think that my girls handled the transition to adulthood a whole lot better because of the experiences, and but also because I was open with them about our financial situation.
Oh, good.
I know a lot of people don't like to talk to their kids about money, and I think that is a tremendous mistake. I think that the whole family has to be on board. If you are embarking on a lifestyle of frugality and you're making the changes that we all need to be making right now to handle the economic situation in the United States and a lot of the Western world, the whole family has to be on board. And if your kids have no idea what it's like to pay bills, and they have no idea, you know, we have this little formula of how much mom has to work to pay for X item that one of the girls wanted. And I would say, well, you know, you want this really, really expensive pair of shoes, and that's going to take me an entire day for you to get those shoes. And that means
that's an expensive pair of shoes.
I know. Well, I mean, I wasn't making a ton of money, but the whole day, you know, I'm working a whole day. Is it really worth that? You know, we're not paying for anything but your shoes on this day. And 9 times out of 10, they would say, yeah, that's too much. And they would rethink it. And
yeah, that's great.
You know, it's just so important that they understand the connection between the amount of time you spend working and what you're paying for.
I love the way you break that down, because we live in an age now of stimulus money, you know, free money from the government. And so people have that disconnect. They no longer understand that money is supposed to be a product of effort or savings or investment, let's say. But to have the money to invest, you have to start by working and saving. And that idea is largely lost on people. And by the way, I think also during the whole crypto bubble, which has since burst, I think the crypto coins taught a generation, especially of young men, at least this is what I've observed, that they don't have to work to become incredibly wealthy. They just have to keep buying, you know, whatever coin it is. And I think that was a horrible lesson for this generation.
I agree completely. You know, you can work in a creative field. You can work in all sorts of fields, but you have to actually work.
Yeah, right. You need to produce something or contribute to the community or the economy.
Exactly. And, you know, I think that it's going to end up going back to that, because there's not really going to be an option.
Completely agree. I think you are ahead of the curve, Daisy. What you're doing with the Frugalite, again, I love that website name. That's pretty cool. Hey. I think you're so far ahead of the curve. And I see for the next 10 plus years, people are either going to live in a frugal manner, or they're going to find themselves out on the streets very quickly. I saw a meme the other day. It was a photo of a family with kids in a rundown RV. And the kid was saying, "My parents lied to me. They told us we were camping. Turns out we're homeless." And it's like, you're living in the RV, which a lot more people are needing to do.
Right. And, you know, that just kind of goes back to talk to your kids, get your kids on board, let them know you can do this and you can contribute to the household by doing this thing.
Absolutely. Now, okay, here's a question I think our audience is going to ask you. So I'll just throw it out here. How do you balance prepping, i.e. needing to stockpile certain types of things like seeds and food and so on, with frugality? I'm sure this is probably the most common balancing act that your audience is faced with. How do you navigate that?
I think that they go hand in hand to a great extent, because I know that my preps that I've put back, you know, like the grocery store canned goods and, you know, dried goods like rice and beans and things like that, have definitely helped me spend less at the grocery store with inflation as it is. Yep. So that part of it goes hand in hand. The other way is how you prep. I think the days where we could go out and buy a $10,000 generator for our house just because have come and gone. I don't have a generator. I have a small little solar generator with some solar panels that I can use to charge, you know, some devices or run a fan or something like that. But I don't have like a whole house generator. I don't have lots of fancy equipment. If things go really sideways, I just plan on getting lower and lower tech. And I think that that is really learning those skills where you can live a lot lower tech than you're living right now.
Yes.
I think that is the way that you combine prepping and frugality. Because, you know, those low-tech things, they use less electricity, so your utility bill will be lower. They don't require as many fancy pieces of equipment. I'm not a gearhead. A lot of preppers are really into their gear, but I figure if I have a few guns that work and are well-maintained and I have some ammo and I have, you know, some food and some seeds, that I can kind of make do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love what you said about low tech. I mean, we are so much on the same page on that. I did an online audiobook called Resilient Prepping, and it has a chart in there, which is high tech, low tech, and no tech solutions.
Yes.
For everything. And I completely agree with you because, oh, you may start out with a super high tech solution, like your super fancy sewing machine, and then boom, the power grid goes down. So now you need, and I actually bought one of these, a 1959 Singer sewing machine with a hand crank.
Oh, I love those.
Yeah.
I have a pedal one.
Yeah. That's even better. But these machines are built like tanks. You can fix them. They have no circuit boards. They have gears, which you can oil, you know, and they're actually more robust and they run like tanks. I mean, no electricity, no worries. And plus, you're going to have to fix your pants. You can't just go out and buy more pants or buy a new bag or you're going to have to fix stuff.
You know, I lived out of a suitcase twice over the past few years. I went to Europe and I lived in Mexico for a year. And the thing that was most interesting to me was how fast my clothes wore out.
Yeah.
Because so, you know, true. We're wearing the same things, and I didn't, in Europe, I didn't have a car, so I walked everywhere. So when you're wearing the same stuff and you've only got two or three pairs of shoes, they wear out pretty darn quick.
Yes. Yeah, that's so true. I mean, I'm super active on the ranch. I go through shoes like crazy, and I find myself almost, I'm laughing at myself because I'll use Gorilla Tape on my shoes for a while to keep them together for the last month.
Oh, and absolutely.
I laugh because my coach used to do that in high school. We used to tease my coach, like, coach, you got duct taping your shoes together again, because he was frugal. You know, we thought it was funny. And then I find I'm doing the same thing.
Right, right. Oh, I know. My kids used to joke I looked like a homeless lady because of the tape on my farm coat.
So funny, yeah. Right, right. But then again, these are exactly the skills that we're going to need, because you learn how to use simple resources to make do.
Yes, and just in the spirit of the Frugalite website, it doesn't always have to be something ugly like duct tape on your coat. I could put forth a little more effort and I could get out my embroidery thread and I could make the rip in my coat look actually really, really cool if I wanted to do that. And those are the kinds of things that make frugality more palatable to those who might not really be that wild about getting on board.
Mm-hmm.
Using your creativity and making it fun and personal.
Now, let's talk about one of the primary benefits of frugality, which is getting out of debt. And
Yes. The
debt, and you know, our audience and your audience are both very sophisticated audiences. So they both know debt is enslavement. Debt is also surveillance. Debt means you're tied down. You don't have the freedom because you don't own it free and clear.
Right. But
we live in a society of so much debt, and some people brag about it. I've seen these people on YouTube bragging about how they own $200 million worth of homes and their debt is, you know, $150 million or more. And they brag like this is an accomplishment. And I'm like, what? That's crazy. But talk to us about what's your take on freedom from debt and what that means.
Okay. I am going to say something that a lot of people disagree with, and you may think I'm crazy when I say it. It really depends on your situation, whether or not paying off debt should be your priority.
Okay, if fair enough.
If you're in a reasonable situation where you're not at risk of losing your home, you're not at risk of losing the transportation that gets you to and from work, and you have a little bit of money to spare to go toward credit card debt or whatever debt you happen to find yourself in, then by all means, I really like the snowball method of Dave Ramsey for getting out of debt.
Yes.
But right now, a lot of people are not that well off who are in debt. They have been putting their groceries on their credit card because they are stretched beyond all capacity. If you're to the point where you are putting your groceries on your credit card, you're about to get kicked out of your apartment, and you're about to lose your car, which is the only way you can get to your job, then paying off debt is not your priority. And I know that every financial expert out there would argue with me, but I'm here to tell you, having a roof over your head and a car in your driveway to get back and forth to work is more important than being debt-free at that point. If you find yourself at that point, you are better off to call your creditors, call the credit card companies and say, look, I'm really sorry, but I cannot pay. And I wish I could, but I can't. My circumstances have changed, because they're going to ask you, have your circumstances changed since you got the credit card? Yes, my circumstances have changed. I can't make my minimum payment. They will either give you a small payment that you might be able to afford, or give you, you know, 3 to 6 months to not pay anything. And sometimes that is what people need. Like, if you can't afford food for your family, or you're about to be homeless, then you need to take the opportunity to work on getting a roof over your head and some stability in your life before you attack the debt.
You know, I agree with the principle of what you're saying, and I've seen cases where people intentionally go into debt in order to complete some schooling for something like to be a paramedic or to be a physician's assistant or what have you.
Right.
Some of these are only 6 or 8 weeks or a 12-week course, and then their income doubles after that period, right?
Right.
It makes total sense to go into debt during that period, because you're going to earn twice as much on the other side of it.
Yes.
And then you can pay off quickly. So I get it. Or even, you know, going to college. When I was in college, I was in a lot of debt. Well, I guess I thought it was a lot at the time, but today it's nothing. But back then I thought it was a ton of debt. And, you know, that makes sense too, because you're investing in your skill set.
And I'm certainly not telling anyone to go get deliberately into more debt. I'm just saying, if you're already in debt and you're at risk of losing absolutely everything, you might need to focus your money on day-to-day life, like a roof over your head and food in your stomach.
Well, right. And right now, because of where we are in the economy, offloading assets is becoming more difficult. For example, real estate prices are suppressed, as you know. And also used vehicle prices are plummeting, I think about 15% year over year right now. And so, you know, I'm sure you would agree that a lot of people got into too much debt because they overspent on perhaps a house or a car that they couldn't afford.
Absolutely. But I think some of the debt we're seeing now is for day-to-day expenses. Like, you went to the pharmacy and bought medication for your child using your credit card, or you couldn't afford groceries, so you put $50 on your credit card, or you filled up with gas to get back and forth to work and you put that on your card. And that kind of debt, it's really different. You know, I mean, it still has the same outrageous interest rate, but it's really different. When people are starting to put day-to-day life expenses on credit cards, that's kind of the beginning of the end.
And that's exactly where so many Americans are right now. And
those are the people that I'm talking to when I say paying that off is not your first priority.
Well, and also think about food inflation. is not reversing. Now, the rate of inflation may be leveling off, but it's still inflation. It's still getting more expensive. And for some food items like eggs, you've seen all the memes about eggs, you know, like, you know, take her out to eat. Sure, you love her. Buy her something expensive. Oh, it's an omelet, you know. it's things like that. But food's not going to get more affordable that I can see. Well, what's your take on where food prices are going?
I don't think it's going to get more affordable. I think that, you know, shopping in season as much as you can, buying locally as much as you can, those are some of the ways to keep your food costs down. And then, of course, raising what you can. Yeah. I live in an apartment in a city, and I kept myself in salad and fresh veggies all summer long, just on my little balcony.
There you go.
So, you know, you can grow a little bit anywhere. You can grow stuff indoors. I've got jars of sprouts going right now to add to my salads.
Oh yeah. I've got all these kale plants that just they're exploding all over the grow boxes indoors under these grow lights that are really inexpensive to operate.
Yeah. And you know, it took me a while to really adapt, but now I really like sprouts, and like a salad tastes kind of weird without them.
I know what you mean. Alfalfa is the easiest to taste. Do you get into like broccoli and radish sprouts and some of the more radical tasting stuff?
Really? I go with pretty ordinary stuff. It's usually alfalfa. And sometimes it's bean sprouts, and I just throw a little handful on my salad every day. And, you know, it adds nutrition. It's all but free to sprout. Mm-hmm. And if you're new to sprouting, the website sproutpeople.org, I don't get any money from them. They are just wonderful. They've got so much information.
Oh, I completely agree with you. And you know, there's a case where buying, you know, a couple pounds of sprouting seeds, people have no idea how long you can sprout with a couple of pounds of sprouting seeds.
It's dirt cheap, and it's very highly nutritious.
Oh, very much so. And think about it, it's fresh raw food that has the enzymes, it's got the chlorophyll in it, it's got all the vitamins activated by the plants, and you don't need soil, you don't need sunlight. You can sprout in a closet if that's the last place you have.
Yes, exactly. It's like the perfect prepper winter food.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely it is. I'm also thinking, and I want your thoughts on this, that you know, gardening used to be considered by most people kind of like a hobby, even an expensive hobby. But mm-hmm. now it seems like the math is changing, where gardening can actually become a money-saving activity compared to some of the prices in the grocery stores. For example, backyard chickens, right? So I have backyard chickens, and I've had them for a decade. I mean, not the exact same chickens, but you know what I mean. And I did it because I just wanted to learn how to do it. And now it's like, wow, I'm sitting on a gold mine here. You know?
Exactly. I know. I mean, it's really changing. And the more self-reliant you can be, the better off you are.
Yeah, completely. So where do you see things going then, in a broad sense?
I think that we're going to see more people leaning toward the self-reliant stuff. Remember when we first started having the COVID lockdowns and all of these people who never had done this stuff previously were suddenly, they were trading sourdough starters and they were, you know, knitting and they were gardening and baking and doing all this awesome stuff. I think we're going to see that trend continue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's wonderful. I think bringing America back to being a productive country instead of a consumptive country is really, really important. And maybe this is the way to do it.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? The silver lining of having the global supply chain shut down. But you know, a lot of the signals that we're watching are showing that these global supply chain disruptions are going to get far worse. Because of, well, you know, collapsing currencies, trade wars, you know, the BRICS nations versus Western nations and so on. I don't think things are ever going to be as readily available and as cheap as they were, you know, 2 or 3 years ago or 3 years.
I agree. I think this is a permanent change. You know, I spend a lot of time in Greece. It's one of my favorite places, and I spend a fair bit of time in Athens, Greece. And it's a big city, but every single balcony is loaded with vegetables and fruits.
Really?
Every single one. I mean, that place, it is such a green city, and it's just what you do. You go home and you take care of your tomato plants. And balconies there on apartment buildings are set up so that people can garden. They've got hoses and, you know, water hookups and water catchment.
Wow.
And all sorts of stuff. A lot of people have built-in boxes. The place that I usually stay when I'm there, I have a little garden in the back. It's like a little basement, and there's a little garden with, you know, ground where I can plant, and it's got an olive tree and orange trees and stuff like that. And when you go shopping, there are supermarkets, but the food there is not very good, and it's really not ideal. The best places to shop, they have a weekly market, and the market moves from neighborhood to neighborhood.
Really?
And the farmers bring their produce, and you know, they come from a few hours away, 2 or 3 hours away, and they just set up their little stand in a road, and you can go there and you can buy stuff. And then when you go shopping at the shops, there's a vegetable stand, there's a fruit stand, there is a bakery, there's a pastry shop, there is a dairy shop. So every shop is specialized. And if you get the owner talking, they'll tell you why their vegetables are the best, because their vegetables come from their cousin who lives, you know, on Santorini or some island, or they live, you know, just 2 hours north, and they have the best soil, and that's why their tomatoes are better than Joe's tomatoes across the street. And they take such pride in what they're offering.
I love that, because it's also, there's a sense of community. You're getting to meet the people.
There is. Like, I know the people that I buy food from there.
Right. And should.
They know where the food came from. You know, I might be in a big city, but it has almost like a small town feel, because
that's amazing.
Everyone I buy from is within walking distance. And of course, the food doesn't come from within walking distance, but you don't get a lot of imported stuff there. All the food that you buy there at the little shops and the stands is food that's raised right there in Greece.
Well, and there's also, you know, nutritionally and from a health standpoint, there's a very powerful factor of eating with the seasons, right?
Absolutely.
And eating local foods and foods that, and the average consumer in America today really doesn't have a sense of, oh, you mean squash is supposed to be in the fall? You know,
right.
They don't really know this stuff, because it's always available.
Exactly. And, you know, I am so much healthier when I'm there, because the food is so much higher quality. I used to have hypothyroidism, and it completely reversed, which I was told was impossible after I spent a year in Europe.
That is truly fascinating. And I'm wondering too, with all the food growing on the balconies, does that mean, is there a premium for south-facing balconies on high-rise buildings?
Probably so. I don't know, because I've never really shopped, but I would imagine so. But
the latitude of Greece is, you know, pretty far north, I think. I don't.
It's a Mediterranean country. It doesn't get super, super cold in the winter. You have about a month where it's around 40 or 50.
Uh-huh.
But that's about as cold as it gets. But anything lower than that's a fluke. And it's very sunny. They have, I believe it's like almost 300 sunny days per year.
Well, okay. That makes a lot of sense. And I know the area is known, you know, like Southern France, even, for example, is known, but I for food production, but I thought a lot of that was due to the jet stream and the ocean, the warm ocean water currents kind of bringing warmth.
That
area.
I'm not really sure, but the produce there is just the best I've ever had.
Well, there you go. The Mediterranean diet. It's one of the healing modalities.
It certainly is.
Well, Daisy, I got to say, I mean, this is just fascinating being able to speak with you about these things. Again, I love your work, and I'm going to get your website correct this time, theorganicprepper.com, correct?
That's right. That's okay. Right.
And thefrugalite.com.
Yes.
Any other thoughts you want to leave our audience with here?
You know, just don't let this panic you. Don't let this terrify you or make you feel like you're going to be suffering for the next 2 years. Things might be different, but that doesn't always mean that it's bad. There's often a lot of good things that come out of hard times.
Exactly. Well said. And frankly, you can eat for a lot less than what people typically spend if you just use some time at home and buy bulk ingredients instead of brand name things or prepared foods. You know, you can eat for one-fifth the cost.
Absolutely.
Producing your own food.
And buy ingredients instead of ready-made stuff.
Absolutely. Completely agree. I mean, a 50-pound bag of organic quinoa, you know, it will last you a long time.
That'll get you a long way.
Mm-hmm. You're going to have to figure out what to do with all that quinoa, but you'll find ways. All right. Well, thank you so much, Daisy. I really appreciate you spending time with us. This has been a fascinating conversation, and please stand by after we finish this up. But I want to say to the audience here, of course, you're always free to repost these interviews. You post it on your own channel, other platforms. Of course, I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com, free speech video platform, and naturalnews.com. And we've been speaking with Daisy Luther of theorganicprepper.com and thefrugalite.com. So folks, be wise about how you spend money and invest money, and you can make it through. You can navigate hard times. You don't have to freak out. You don't have to panic. So thank you for listening. God bless you all.